strive for significance and success on their own terms. From the very first message I received, I vowed to answer each and every single one. I'd always hoped to create a company to empower women. This was my small way of beginning to fulfill that mission, even if it was just from my bedroom in the middle of the night. Soon I began to receive responses to my emails, young women telling me that my letter had changed their lives. They told me they had received that interview, that promotion, or discovered a new opportunity due to the encouragement and advice I had provided. Every single time I read these notes, I would get goosebumps. This was the power of the internet, that I could connect with these women who lived across the globe from me, that I could provide vital feedback that wasn't available to them where they lived, and that their lives would be changed for the better. I couldn't get enough of it. It was then that I began to wonder, what if there was a site where millions of us all could share our learning among each other? A place for real discussions, real advice. Not just the graduation speech version of how we got various jobs, for example, but what we'd learned in yesterday's meetings and after work tonight. How we had failed recently but gotten back up with our family and friends' encouragement. Most important, wouldn't it be better if all these women who are emailing me could also talk to each other? So that they could connect and help each other along the way. What if instead of sharing all of this information one-on-one behind the scenes, there was a platform for all of us to exchange our various advice and insights and ideas from the ground level, where we could come and help each other become that much better and stronger together? In this way, we could realize our dreams, both personal and professional. What would it look like to create a place where women and men of all backgrounds came together in order to support women, lift up, connect, and encourage? What if we created an online community where everyone was or could become a mogul? Listen to the whispers. There are moments in each of our lives where we are presented with an invitation to pursue something big. We can listen to the seeds of inspiration, or we can ignore them and stay where we are. I encourage you to learn to listen. Sometimes you don't know what to do with those whispers, and that's okay. Just allow yourself to dream. What would happen if you did something about them? Think about one step you could take to start working toward the realization of that dream. Could you take a class that might give you a skill set? Could you reach out to a role model and see what doors that might open? Could you connect with a like-minded individual and share your dream and see if, putting your heads together, you might come to a solution or a next step that you could take together? Allowing yourself to dream means listening to those inner whispers of longing and seeing where they want to take you. Just get started. Nothing will work unless you do, Maya Angelou has said. I felt like I knew that there was an opportunity brewing, and if I worked hard enough, I could create the exact platform I was envisioning. The only problem was that I didn't know how to build a platform, and I certainly didn't have the funds to hire a team of engineers. But I'd never let not knowing how to do something stop me before. Not knowing is really an invitation to grow, learn, and evolve. Are you going to stay where you are? Or are you going to stretch out of your comfort zone and teach yourself how to do the very thing you don't know how to do? The only way I became a film producer was by being willing to take on jobs I didn't know how to do and vowing to learn how to do them, whether by Googling or by asking questions of everyone around me who might possibly know the answer. I didn't know what I was doing, but that had never stopped me. It shouldn't stop you. It doesn't matter how you start, where you start, or why you start. All that matters is that you start. When you dare to try something new, it can be the foot in the door that leads to everything you've ever wanted. I'd recently published a book with my father and brother called From Business Strategy to Information Technology Roadmap, a practical guide for executives and board members. I'm a huge nerd, I know. What does that even mean? The book was written to teach organizations how to build out their technology infrastructure in order to bolster their overall business strategy. Based on that, I thought to myself, if I was teaching others how to build their technology, why couldn't I build out the technology for this idea I was thinking of? If I was willing to take the time to learn how to code, I could build this platform myself. But teaching yourself how to code isn't easy, especially if you're not a very technical person, which I most certainly wasn't. Again, David was the tech prodigy of the family. I could have asked him for his help on coding, and it would have taken him probably a few hours, seriously. But I wanted to push myself to be the one to actually create this platform, knowing its nuances inside and out. Deep down, I felt like this was probably the next step for me. The moment that I had been preparing for all my life, when I would finally be ready to create something on my own. I wanted to start every part myself, so that I would know the difficulties of each aspect, never taking for granted the challenges that my potential future teammates might face. But David did kindly provide me guidance. He recommended referencing a PDF called Ruby on Rails Tutorial by Michael Hartle, a step-by-step guide for how to download the necessary software and then build a website, as well as Q&A forums like Stack Overflow that were priceless resources when you ran into complications or problems. So every day I would go to my day job, then in the evening, work on my side hustles. Then around 3 a.m., the phone calls and the emails would stop. I'd make myself a cup of tea, clear the kitchen table, and teach myself how to code Ruby on Rails. It took me an entire month to get through the first chapter, which was about how to download and set up the right software and tools, like Sublime Text and GitHub. I'm not going to lie. Those initial first steps were painful, and they may be for you too. Don't get discouraged. Once I got through the setup and made it to the second chapter, I started enjoying myself. It was during the second chapter, when I began coding the very first features for the site, that it all became fun. Push yourself to begin. Step up to the moment. The hard part is often just beginning, no matter what you're trying to do. And thank goodness it was so fun, because my schedule became insane at this time. From 9:30 a.m. to 7 p.m., I'd be working at CBS. Then I'd get home and start my second job, producing films. I'd work on that from 8 p.m. to 11 p.m. Around 11 p.m., I'd respond to the various emails of the day asking for advice, trying to get to inbox zero. And then from 3 a.m. to 5 a.m., I'd be teaching myself how to code. Finally, at 5 a.m., I would put my phone on sleep mode, turn out the lights, and sleep until 9 a.m. I'd get up, get ready within 10 minutes, get to CBS by 9:30 a.m., and do it all over again. This grueling schedule wasn't easy to keep up. Did I always have time to do my laundry? No. Did I always go to work wearing matching socks? No. Did I have a lot of good hair days during this period? No. But was it worth it? Absolutely. Page by page, I built a very basic website, which was initially a simple grid of pictures. Despite its simplicity, it had all the functionalities that I thought could help women from around the world connect and share what was most important to them, their real lives, their real selves. I didn't want this to be a static blog with random advice from me. I wanted this to be a living, breathing community, 100% user-generated in real time. I wanted the focus to be on the women themselves. Thus, I wanted users to be able to upload content and upvote or downvote it, so that on a real-time basis, you could see what was trending amongst women's conversations all around the world. To be able to see right now, in this moment, what was at the top of women's minds. Of course, I didn't have any users yet while I was creating the platform, but without me even having to ask, my wonderful mother and father were already at their keyboards, spending time on the site, providing feedback as test users. My sister, Kim, a creative genius and renowned travel photographer with a worldwide following across her social channels, provided me with the initial photos that I could use for the site's design. From the very start, I knew what I wanted to call the platform. Back in business school, I had had a nickname. My friends would call me the media mogul around campus as a term of endearment, given all of my work in the industry. But as I Googled the term one day years later, I was astonished at how rarely the word mogul was used to describe females. There were just a few names that were linked with that word within the search results. Oprah was one, yes, of course, no argument there. Beyoncé was another. And also Sheryl Sandberg, Melinda Gates, Marissa Mayer, and Sarah Blakely, founder of Spanx. The spark sparse list of women ended there. Men easily made up the top search results. Warren Buffett, Jeff Bezos, and so many more. It was at that moment that I knew I had to call the platform mogul. I wanted to change the connotation of that word. I wanted the word to be attributable to men and women both. Women are moguls too. We are risk takers, dreamers, and doers. We can set a goal and accomplish it and then some. The world just hasn't been noticing. But of course, the domain mogul.com was already taken. Probably by a man. Actually, I met him at a friend's dinner recently and he's very nice. So I bought the domain www.onmogul.com. I envisioned that one day when people were talking about something they had read on the platform and someone asked where they had read it, they would come to say, on Mogul. I knew I was getting closer to being ready to put this out into the world. I'd first started receiving emails in January. It was now June. There were so many ideas I had for how the site could grow, but I knew that I had time to build that out. I didn't want to get stuck trying to perfect the platform. I'd seen many friends or colleagues with a brilliant idea who were too afraid to put something out there that wasn't perfect. And so time would pass as they pursued perfection, instead of recognizing that your prototype needs interaction with the world to perfect itself. I'm a strong believer that you need to put your idea out there as quickly as possible. Do as much as you can with your rapid prototype, but know that you will be able to iterate toward perfection as you go. What I think is much more important than a perfect prototype is a proof of concept. Make sure that your concept is strong, targeted, and specific, and that you have a way to prove its worth. That is 100% more important than a perfect prototype of a concept that is only 50% there. Mogul is just a simple platform to start, a place for women to connect and share information. I knew, in my mind, there were so many ways that it could grow, with partnerships and additional resources outside the platform. But what mattered first was, would the women come to it? Would they connect? Would they share? Would they be encouraged? Had they been looking for something like Mogul all along? That was the concept that was important to convey. The rest could come with time. My launch plan was simple. I planned to send an email to the thousands of women who had reached out to me since the Forbes list ran. I figured hopefully they would pass it along to their friends, start using it, and the platform would grow over time. I certainly had huge hopes for it becoming a true destination for women across the globe, but I thought it would take quite some time for it to grow. I had heard that another site called Upworthy had been run by a remote team for its first 2 or 3 years. As a result, I 100% assumed I'd be a one-woman mogul team working out of my bedroom for at least the next 2 years. Finally, I felt like the platform was ready. It was about midnight on a warm summer night. I pulled out my personal computer and jumped right into work on Mogul, knowing that I wanted to send it out by the end of the night. I carefully drafted an email to these women, sharing what I hoped this site could be. I included the link, I pressed send, and then I waited. Finding the confidence to take a leap. Ever since I was a young girl, I've had this inner voice that emerges whenever I feel afraid to take a chance. I say to myself, number one, what do you have to lose? If you succeed, it will be such an amazing opportunity. And number two, if you don't do this now, you'll regret it for the rest of your life. And I never want to regret anything. So I've had the tendency to push myself to do something, even when I'm afraid. I think about the fact that if I am fearful, that's yet another reason to do it. I should do it because I'm afraid. Progress, not perfection. In the middle of teaching myself how to code, while still ruminating on the ideas I had had since age 14, I decided to resign from CBS. By this time, all of my other projects had come to a natural end. And though it may have been risky to let go of that steady salary, there was something about how passionately I felt about coding that made me 100% positive that this was the next step for me. I didn't want to only devote a few hours a night to it. I wanted to give it my all. I'd never resigned from anything before in my life, as most of my internships and jobs had had natural timelines. I had difficulty leaving anyone or anything in general because of my deep loyalty to those in my life. But when would be the right time if not now? There is never a perfect time to start living your dream, and for me, it was either now or never. I wasn't married. I didn't have kids. I could live on dollar packs of ramen noodles if I needed to. So what did I have to lose? My father had always taught me that money was freedom. But he'd also always said that starting a business and taking your future into your own hands was a lot less risky than working for someone else and putting your future in their hands. Sometimes you had to trust that with all your passion, dedication, and hard work, the money would come. I knew that this was my chance to control my own fate and build financial independence through my own hard work while hopefully creating a global impact, reaching women across the world. So, I resigned. I knew that I needed to rip off the Band-Aid. And luckily, my superiors were incredibly supportive of me. We made a sweet and memorable pact to reconnect in 5 years at the Modern Restaurant inside the Museum of Modern Art, where we could talk about all that had transpired during our days at CBS and all that had happened since. I launched Mogul thereafter. I crossed my fingers and hoped for the best. Within 3 days of launch, I noticed something unusual within my charts of analytics. We had reached more than 150,000 people. Something viral was happening. Within 6 days, we reached 500,000 people. By the next week, we had reached nearly 1 million people, becoming one of the fastest growing platforms for women. I couldn't believe it. I scoured the site and read about the women who had joined. There were already so many comments being posted, and I responded to each and every one. I wanted to know who these women were, and why they had connected to something that had, until recently, existed solely in my head. Here's what they shared. I'm from Pakistan. Here, a girl's life is all about marriage, but Mogul helps me out by proving to them that we are more than what they say. Now, I'm kind of a feminist, and I love, love, love this Mogul. Kenza. My biggest dreams are female empowerment, especially coming from a culture in the Middle East where that falls by the wayside. It's a joy to be a part of such a hearty and established program. Stephanie. Women are helping to change the world, but many still face challenges with self-esteem and confidence. Mogul allows everyone to help these women see their true inner beauty. Candy. I would have fainted, but I was too excited to read what they were saying and dive into all that they themselves had begun to post. Mogul wasn't going to have a soft launch after all. I felt justified that I didn't wait until everything looked perfect before I sent Mogul out into the world. The design of Mogul was incredibly simple at the start, but I was proud of it. Its design didn't matter. Its message did, and it was connecting with people from the very start. The users themselves were able to jump right in and start connecting, and we were able to perfect its design in time. It may have looked simple, but it was fueled by the power of women connecting with other women, and nothing is more powerful than that. Melinda Gates recently tweeted, "Take it from Tiffany Pham. If you want to build a perfect business, start with an imperfect idea." I'm so honored by those words. But it has been true for me, and I share this with you in the hopes it will be true for you. I was willing to put something out there that was still essentially being developed, and Mogul's interactions with its users and the world allowed it to evolve into the Mogul it is today. Make others your motivation. One thing that has always kept me motivated, even when I'm tired and overwhelmed, is thinking about the people my work will benefit. For example, Kim, David, and I made a childhood promise to each other to buy our parents a new home one day. We saw how much they had sacrificed for their children, and we always felt motivated to do this for them as our gift, and thank you for their unending love and sacrifices. I was always saving pennies and quarters because I wanted to honor what they had given me. That was more important than any trinket I might find at the toy store. Mogul was the same way. I was so focused not necessarily on how I would build this company, but on how this platform might help these women who were already reaching out to me, that I worked through those late nights, inspired and energized. It didn't matter how tired I was, there was more to do for them, and I couldn't wait to get to it. Dare to dream. Those million people, women who had found Mogul and fallen in love with it so quickly, helped further confirm for me that building this company was my destined future. I jumped right in. From that first day, I was perched cross-legged on my bed, pillow over my lap, laptop on the pillow, in my pink pajamas, working harder than I had ever worked before. I barely left my room. Truly, I would frequently go for a run first thing in the morning at 6:30, but that was pretty much the only time I left the apartment all day. I didn't watch TV. I hardly ate. I barely slept. All I could do was focus. But I so loved what I was doing, it didn't feel like work at all. My parents had come up from Texas and stayed with my brother and me during those first few relentless months to provide their endless support as I embarked on the journey ahead. When I would emerge from my room around 8 p.m., they would be lovingly waiting with warm bowls of Vietnamese pho. I would hardly have an appetite, but they would encourage me to eat and remind me that even moguls needed time to rest in order to think. After that, I would head back into my room and continue working until 5 a.m., when I would finally allow myself to sleep. I hadn't saved up much of a nest egg. In fact, I started Mogul with just $200 in the Mogul bank account. But I'd done the math, and I knew that based upon our reach, we could start making advertising revenue on the site right away. Can you guess who our very first client was? Soraya, from York Street Noodle House in New Haven. As you will recall, she had been my first advertiser at the Yale Herald, and had grown into a loyal friend through the years. When I told her about Mogul and our mission, she believed in it immediately and bought our first marketing campaign without question. The next $500 in the Mogul bank account came from her. And that was the start. Mogul was now not only making money, but immediately profitable. Though with a one-person team, that wasn't hard to do. Small decisions can have a big impact. There were two decisions I made on this early iteration of Mogul that I believe helped us to grow. For one, I went to a website called atthis.com and got embeddable widgets that encouraged sharing of content. So anytime a user scrolled down on Mogul, there was an invitation to share what they had read on social media. I believe this led to its viral explosion. For every million visits, there would be 650,000 social shares on average. I also talked about Mogul to anyone and everyone I would meet, never shying away from reiterating our mission and vision. I would share what it was I was working on next and would be surprised at how frequently this turned into an offer of help and support from the person I was with. They too were very passionate about this mission and wanted me to meet their friend at X company, or their past manager who was now an investor. Did I know the exact path that Mogul was going to take? Did I know that I'd actually be able to code something myself, that it would work, that people would respond to it? Not at all. I had no idea where it was going to go, but I had a gut feeling that this was what I was supposed to be doing, that this would be an incredible journey worth taking, to learn, to build, and to put it out there. Now one more thing. I get asked all the time, is coding essential for women to know? In response to this, I could only tell you how it worked for me. It wasn't too dissimilar from the experience Neo had in The Matrix. Once he could see all that code for what it was, he was never the same and his purpose in life was beautifully and elegantly clear. That's how I felt when I built Mogul. Learning to code changed my life. If I hadn't learned how to code, I wouldn't have understood our product nearly as well. I wouldn't have had such an intimate knowledge of our users and what they loved. In those early days, I was so deep in the machinations of the site that I was making tiny adjustments all throughout the day. Knowing how to code myself allowed me to respond to user feedback in real time. It allowed me to evolve the platform in essential ways every single day. That close-up view of what users responded to helped me to quickly refine over time toward what Mogul has become. And it came to mean a lot to our users that I'd initially built Mogul myself. For them to know truly that they could do the same, that life was in their control, opportunity was theirs for the taking. You just have to be willing to step on board and get ready for the ride of your life. Hashtag you are a mogul. You can wait for someone else to solve that problem, or you can look at your very own capable hands and realize that this is the moment that you've been waiting for. You are the one who can solve it. There will be sacrifices along the way. Sleep for sure. But there's nothing more satisfying than accomplishing something that once seemed daunting and impossible entirely on your own. Hashtag I am a mogul by Debbie Sterling, founder and CEO of Goldieblocks and Time's Person of the Moment. As a girl obsessed with princesses growing up, it never even occurred to me that engineering was something I would enjoy. In fact, the first time I even thought about it was my senior year of high school, when my math teacher encouraged me to pursue it in college. Engineer? I pictured someone conducting a train. But I gave it a try when I went to Stanford and, 4 years later, I graduated with a degree in mechanical engineering / product design. Unfortunately, I was one of the only women in my program. I knew we needed to do something about this. And I decided I wanted to, quote-unquote, disrupt the pink aisle with a toy that would introduce girls to the joy of engineering at a young age. I created Goldieblocks. I never set out to become a toy developer, but sometimes you have to follow life's inspirations as they come and explore their meaning. This was a way in which I knew I could impact girls at a young age. Sure, I could be one of the few women in engineering jobs at a company, but who would really see me? I knew my impact could be greater if I started to show girls right from the beginning that they could build things themselves, to remind every girl she is more than just a princess. In developing our character Goldie and her diverse group of friends, our goal was to create strong female role models who have grit and are fueled by failure, yet still fun and relatable for girls and boys alike. The toy has now spawned books and a YouTube series. One of my favorite moments in our series is when Goldie takes apart an old car charger and uses its guts to build a DIY phone charger. As she pulls out the circuit board, she assures the viewers that these wires can seem intimidating at first, but they're actually super simple. That's the message I want to send through this show. Let's not intimidate kids with engineering. Let's empower them and encourage them to tinker, maybe mess up a few times, but ultimately use their creativity to become the makers and problem solvers of tomorrow. It's okay to be a princess, but I want Goldieblocks to let every girl know she can build her castle too. Chapter 6. Accelerate your success with the right partner. I left something out of that last chapter. You know that empowering, exciting story about finally realizing my dreams and at last building a company that could help millions of women around the world? Well, the week I launched Mogul was also the week that my boyfriend and I broke up. We'd been dating 3 years. The highest of highs married with the lowest of lows. The writing had been on the wall for a while, but I didn't want to see it. Of course, now I look back on it and I'm thankful it happened. During a period where I had a lot going on, the biggest job of all was being his girlfriend, as he was upset that we did not live together at this time and wanted me at his apartment every day. When we broke up, I poured myself into Mogul and never looked back. That said, I don't think you have to sacrifice love to have a career. I think that having a partner who can support you in your endeavors and vice versa can be the greatest gift. The ideal is to have someone who is a partner in the truest sense, so that you are pushing each other forward, supporting each other's dreams, and allowing each other to dream even bigger because you are by each other's side. Do not get married unless you find this. Who you choose to be your life partner is just as important as who you decide to have as your business partner. It can make or break your success. There have been studies from HBS about the disturbing disparity that arises between the success of HBS male graduates and the success of female graduates. Despite the fact that some people like to blame this disparity on the fact that women chose to opt out for a few years when they had children, the studies were clear that it wasn't motherhood that prevented women from reaching their career goals. Many of them were still working full-time and always had. It was the lack of supportive husbands that led women to have less career success. Husbands still expected their career to come first and expected that any childcare or household issues were something their wife needed to handle, even if she had a high-powered career as well. The headline in a recent Harvard Business Review article put it starkly. If you can't find a spouse who supports your career, stay single. The choices that we make in our romantic lives are just as important to our eventual success as the choices we make in our careers. I've certainly made some terrible choices along the way. The fact is, I didn't know what I needed until I had 3 relationships, one after the other. But, as we've discussed, it's not really failure if you learn from the experience. This is especially true when it comes to relationships. I know that each relationship that I have had has taught me what I need, what is a deal breaker, and what will ultimately serve me in the long run. As you can tell by now, I don't worry easily. I typically have things under control. But the area of my life where I experience the most anxiety is my love life, because it is the one area of my life that I cannot control. One of the first viral posts I posted as a user myself on Mogul was called, "Do not get married, all caps, unless you ask your partner these 15 questions, or else you'll wish you had." Looking back, I didn't mean to sound so ominous. I suppose the breakup was still fresh on my mind. The post was about an article I'd read in the New York Times that really resonated with me on the heels of the breakup. It encouraged asking questions of each other like, what are your goals and are you willing to adjust them for the relationship? What's your relationship with your family? And why do you want to spend your life's journey with me? The post reached more than 11.5 million views. I wasn't alone in trying to navigate the rocky path of relationships and heartbreak. That post was so powerful to the Mogul community because it reminded us to bring both our heads and our hearts into the equation. As women, we tend to lead with the heart, and sometimes the head gets left behind. I now strive to keep both involved, just like I do with any job I pursue, though I admittedly will always lead more with my heart. Does he light me up and fill me with passion? Great. But I also try to think about the practical side as well. Are we building each other up? Does it feel like we are truly partners? You will find yourself having stronger relationships when you bring your head into the equation as well. We must make smart decisions about who will be by our sides as we pursue our dreams. Here's what I've learned in my quote-unquote failed relationships about what I, and perhaps you, need going forward. Share all parts of you. My first serious relationship took place shortly after college graduation. I met W at a Yale birthday party in New York City that he and his friends from Princeton had crashed. One of his friends liked my friend, and we were their wingman and wingwoman, respectively. While our friends didn't end up working out, we did, and we were together for many years. W was often likened to actor Robert Pattinson. Handsome, charming, athletic, and smart. He had been such a popular guy at Princeton that the shy girl inside me was stunned he could like me. But there was one major problem in our relationship. I was so concerned with always being the perfect girlfriend to him that I wasn't actually being myself. I would give, and I didn't share how I was really feeling if I was ever upset or disappointed by something. We never fought, and that was something we were really proud of at the time. But now, I see it was because we weren't telling each other what was truly going on. Conflict is a crucial part of communication and connection. If you aren't openly addressing your conflicts, you aren't truly communicating and connecting. And that's the thing about trying to keep up with appearances and not being your authentic self. It can never last. When I moved to Boston for business school, we broke up. seemingly due to the long distance, but more likely due to a connection that was only skin deep and could have been so much deeper. I never really knew what was going on with W, and I don't think he really knew what was going on with me. This became abundantly clear when we rekindled things about a year after having broken up. W had told me early on in our relationship that he had only cried once in his life, during the film Ray. Strange, he knew. But he began to cry for the second time ever, as he told me why he felt we had truly broken up a year before. "Every time I saw you being successful, it ate away at me." I looked at him in shock. I couldn't believe that my dear W could feel that way. As soon as he said those words, I knew this could never last. I knew that the person whom I was meant to be with would never be undermined or hurt by me being who I am. Grow in the same direction. Then came the relationship that I was in when I launched Mogul. S too had gone to Princeton. S was charming, athletic, and smart, just like W. He was more introverted, but had a tight-knit group of friends from high school in Princeton, which coincidentally included W. Thus, when S and I started dating, it caused a rift in their friendship. In some ways, I think that S was overly invested in making the relationship work because of his competitive nature. In hindsight, he was likely more in love with the idea of me. Within 3 weeks of dating, S told me that I had to be his girlfriend. Within 2 months of dating, S told me that he knew I was the one. He swept me off my feet initially with these grand gestures. By our first anniversary, he had begun shopping for engagement rings at Tiffany's. But soon he was forcefully pushing for us to move in together. I needed more time. I wanted to let the relationship continue to grow at its natural pace in order to flourish. When I asked if we could possibly set a pace that was more in tune with both of us, rather than this constantly accelerated pace, he seemed to understand, albeit with hints of bitterness and resentment. From that moment onward, things didn't seem quite the same. We should have ended things right there, but we didn't. We dated for another 2 years. It is hard when you are in a relationship, even a relationship that is not working, to figure out when to pull the plug. You get caught up in the comfort of having that person there and the routines you've established. Plus, we did have fun. S and I would discover new parts of the city together. A speakeasy in the West Village that had no sign on the front door, or karaoke clubs in Koreatown with our friends at all hours of the night. I stayed focused on the occasional good things and tried to brush aside the increasingly bad. Then, in 2014, S applied to business school. I offered to help him with his application, but he refused to let me. Instead, he made it a competition. "If you got into Harvard, I can get into Harvard. I'm going to get in on my own." He had become dead set on matching or exceeding me in every way. When he wasn't accepted, there was an immediate chill in our relationship. Shortly thereafter, instead of being supportive of what I was doing, S would scoff at me. Friends would come by and be shocked to hear him mock me and taunt me for trying to teach myself how to code. He'd roll his eyes if others talked about my coding and mimic me typing, hunched over a pretend keyboard. I'm shocked looking back on it that we lasted after those demeaning gestures. The night that Mogul went live, I went over to S's apartment. I was so invigorated with what I had just done, so excited that I had reached this new phase in my life, and firmly convinced that this was everything I had always dreamed of. Of course I wanted to share it with S. Instead of being supportive, he was angry. Angry that I had quit a good job for what he considered a pipe dream, unlikely to succeed. It was devastating to be on this high, accomplishing this goal you'd always held for yourself, and the person you love and who you hoped would cheer you on can't even muster an ounce of happiness. A few nights later, we finally broke it off for good. This is what he said to me as his parting words. "I don't think I can be with an R." R was the CFO of a major investment bank, and her husband was the founding partner of a law firm. R had been a kind of second mother to S, and as a result, we got together with their family every month. They were a true power couple, with three sons, and they seemed to have it all. Though, of course, I'm sure they had their occasional issues. Overall, they had a great family life, rewarding careers, the whole shebang. Through the years, we had often marveled at their kindness and generosity, with us contemplating that their family structure was what we should aim for. We would have our fulfilling careers, and together we would build a great family life while encouraging each other to achieve our dreams. So when S said that to me with sadness in his eyes, I knew he had changed. He no longer wanted an R. He no longer wanted a true partner. Me. So what went wrong? Since the moment he had met me, he knew I was someone who was kind and loving, but also driven with goals and dreams. How could he have changed his mind about wanting a woman who wanted a career? I believe it's because he stopped going after what he really truly wanted. S loved to write, and when we first started dating, he imagined being a comedy writer one day, or if not a writer, a teacher of some kind. Those were the kinds of jobs that truly made him feel alive, and I was hopeful he would pursue them. The problem? Those aren't super lucrative fields, at least initially. So somewhere along the way, S convinced himself that finance would be the right path for him. That was the fork in the road that meant the end of us. Because when S saw me going after my dreams and having success, it reminded him of how much he was sacrificing in pursuit of money. And so, he stopped being supportive. He decided he wanted a more traditional partner, someone who would fit the mold within the new, more stoic life he had determined for himself. While I don't remember everything about the conversation that night, I do remember he kept talking about how he wanted someone to stay home, do the dishes, and walk the dog. And then he essentially gave me an ultimatum. Choose him or Mogul. You all know which one I chose, brokenhearted. And it was the right choice. If your partner can't get behind you having a career of your own, having goals you want to accomplish that are outside of being a support system, there's no need to waste any more time and energy in that relationship. If you follow your dreams, you will find someone to come alongside you who supports you along the way and vice versa. If your partner is not encouraging you in your endeavors, if your partner is not a cheerleader, sounding board, and confidant, find someone else. As Reese Witherspoon recently put it, run away from a man who can't handle your ambition. So many men think ambition is sexy. Those who express disdain for ambitious women are those who feel insecure, and nothing is less attractive than insecurity. If someone doesn't feel secure in his or her own identity and purpose in the world, he or she will see a woman with ambition and confidence as a threat. They may look to diminish you and your goals because they cannot stomach you achieving more success than them, even if you yourself care more for their love than the success. So those signs of insecurity are huge red flags. Don't ignore them. Trust that this person isn't yet ready to be with you, that they need to feel confident in themselves and where they are going, otherwise they may only try to bring you down. If you want your relationship to succeed, you have to be with a person who not only supports your passion, but also at the same time is pursuing his or her own. This enables you to grow in the same direction, and then you can cheer each other on along the way. Otherwise, if you are headed in opposite directions, you'll always feel alone, isolated, and unable to reach them until it's too late. Work and relationships may seem like separate subjects, but they are greatly intertwined, especially for women. If your work is important to you, choosing a partner who supports your ambitions is absolutely crucial to fulfilling your dreams. Get someone who gets you. My last love, several years after S and I broke up, and I launched Mogul, was primarily long distance. T and I had been friends for years, and despite the fact that long distance has its challenges, I learned to truly be myself and open up to someone in a way I'd never before, perhaps because he already seemed to like me for me. I communicated with this man in a way I never had in my other two relationships, where I spent a lot of time with them and we did a lot of things together, but we didn't share a deep, passionate connection. Meanwhile, T and I, with our parallel backgrounds and interests, were able to come together in an intellectual and emotional way that I subsequently identified as being truly rewarding and non-negotiable in all relationships going forward. Tiffany, when we are one-on-one, he once asked me, puzzled, why don't you talk about yourself or your successes with Moglemore? It was then that I knew that this was the kind of man that was right for me. After years of being with others who discouraged and belittled me and around whom I would therefore downplay everything, this man encouraged me and was proud of me. A successful, handsome businessman and entrepreneur himself, he was a dreamer too, and absolutely pursuing his passions, and thus was not intimidated by me or competitive for my time. He taught me to really look for someone that I admire and respect, someone with whom I have a deep emotional connection, not just someone who is nice and easy to get along with. Ultimately, we were on different life paths and separated by geographies, so next steps for us are unknown, at least in the short term. But I will always be grateful that he showed me that it is possible to be with someone who totally gets you for you, who doesn't want you to change or dampen your passions, and who will support your dreams as they go after their own. As you build your career, you are likely going to be searching for the right partner to come alongside you. But don't sacrifice your career and what you truly want to accomplish in life to accommodate someone you love. As Lady Gaga says, some women follow men, and some women follow their dreams. If you're wondering which way to go, remember that your career will never wake up and tell you that it doesn't love you anymore. I couldn't say it any better. Hashtag, you are a mogul. Who you choose to be with is an important component to your career and life, and finding a partner with whom you can truly be yourself and who supports your dreams wholeheartedly is essential to long-term success of your career and relationship. Don't be afraid to be ambitious and hold firm for someone who loves that ambition as much as they love you. Hashtag I am a mogul by Rebecca Minkoff, fashion designer and judge on Project Runway Fashion Startup. I started my company when I was just 21. I didn't know necessarily what I was doing, but I was driven and committed and willing to do what it takes. I didn't have much time for dating. When you start your own company, it seriously demands all of your time for a while. Until you build up a team to support you, you're the one doing every aspect of that company. So it meant that I didn't have a lot of opportunities for relationships. Still, I so wanted to find someone to love. I knew I wanted a family, kids, the whole shebang, even though my company was truly my first baby. As a result, back then, I sometimes chose someone being there over someone being right. I had relationships that did not support me at all. Relationships that, looking back, I questioned what on earth I was thinking. Then I met my husband, and it was like, oh, this is what love is. Everything I had been dabbling with in the past was a cheap imitation. Why did I waste so much time pining over that guy? This was the real thing. We dated long distance the entire time, so that by the time we were actually married, it was so refreshing and invigorating to just get to be with him. And he was totally supportive of my career. He knew that my company was incredibly important to me, that it was sometimes going to require all of my time and energy, and that he would take the back burner. Not always, of course, but at times. He didn't feel threatened by that, and he always gave me the space to commit to my company. Once we had children, we had to navigate entirely new terrain. We had to reorient our partnership and figure out how to navigate what our lives would look like now that we were parents. I have the kind of career where twice a year, during Fashion Week, my family is just not going to see me. My husband is going to have to step up during that time, and he does, without complaint. There are also times when I take the lead with parenting. We don't buy into the old school thinking that mom has dinner on the table and dad works late. The only way I can make my job work is to have an incredible partner, someone who is willing to value my career and my goals as equal to his own. He makes it possible for me to have the very full life I do, filled with love, kids, and a kick-ass career. Don't ask me about work-life balance. I always say I'm not balanced, I'm juggling. But I'm so grateful I have the opportunity. And someone who forgives me and loves me anyway, even when a ball inevitably crashes to the ground. Chapter 7. Pitch yourself and your big dream. The weeks and months that came after the initial launch of Mogul were critical to making sure that Mogul thrived on a solid foundation, rather than becoming yet another media company that bursts onto the scene only to fade away soon after. I was aware of the bleak statistics. 90% of startups fail. I knew that given our momentum, Mogul could be poised to be part of the 10% that succeed. I also knew I had spent every day since I made a vow to follow in my grandmother's footsteps, preparing myself for this moment. I had the skill set to make this work, but I had a long road ahead of me. I would need to bring on investors in order to keep our momentum going and to ensure that our rapid growth did not lessen. This can be the scariest part for some people, when you have to trust your idea, get up in front of people, and pitch who you are and what you are doing. When you have to let go of controlling every aspect of your concept and bring on partners to further your growth and expansion. But understanding that you can't go it alone is a key moment in every dreamer's growth. By listening to your gut and truly believing in what you are doing, you'll find that with the right people by your side, you can go farther than you ever imagined. Always reciprocate. I've learned time and time again that opportunities often come down to the people you know and how much they are willing to put their necks out for you. As I've stressed before, it does not matter what degree you have or what school you went to. People are the ones who get things done, who will connect you to the very person or very company that can change your life. And the only way you find people willing to do that is if you are good to them. This is the path of reciprocity, and it can be a major accelerator. You never know how the next person you meet might be able to open doors for you, so always be kind, be generous, and be willing to go the extra mile. When they do that in return, it could be the very opportunity you've been looking for. I first met Alex through the director of Girlfriend, who was one of his close friends at the time. He'd heard about how I delivered on the distribution side for Girlfriend and that I was working at CBS, and we soon struck up a friendship. Alex had just launched a startup that did digital distribution, and he invited me to join his company's advisors. It was the first time I'd been approached to be an advisor to a technology startup, despite years serving on various nonprofit boards, and I wasn't quite sure what it would entail, but I liked Alex and felt like he would be a great collaborator, so I signed on. I soon found myself on monthly phone calls with him and the other members of the team, and it became clear that an introduction to CBS would be beneficial. I was more than happy to connect him with a colleague, though I had no direct say. Alex landed CBS as a client shortly thereafter. It was just a few months later that I began coding the first version of Mogul. When Alex heard about it, he insisted on introducing me to a few of his other advisors and friends. So just a few weeks after Mogul launched, Alex sent off about 10 emails. "Well, you have to meet Tiffany. She just launched a company. She's one of Forbes 30 under 30. You have to see what she's doing and get on board." Okay, that's not verbatim, but you understand the passion with which he wrote these emails and the urgent sense he instilled in the recipients that this was someone you wanted to pay attention to and a company you didn't want to miss. As a result, I soon found out that Will, a co-founder of Match.com, wanted to set up a call. Now, I'd known that bringing on investors was the next step for the company, but I was so busy keeping the site going that I hadn't yet taken the time to create a pitch deck. Our phone call was scheduled for the next day, so I quickly threw something together, practiced my pitch in front of my parents and brother, and then tried to take some deep breaths. The next afternoon, there I sat, on my bed in my apartment, when the phone rang. It was time for my first major pitch. I nervously answered and started talking about Mogul, about its trajectory, all the numbers, and where I envisioned the company going. Once I got started talking about Mogul, the nervousness subsided somewhat. The passion I felt about Mogul and the impact it was already having took over. But as I wrapped up the pitch, I knew this was where I had to nail the ask. My brother had suggested a line for the end of my pitch. "I would love to invite you on board as an investor." I thought it was a great way to end my pitch, but I tweaked it slightly. "I would love to invite you on board as both an advisor and investor." Pause. "Yes, I'd love to. Can you send me the documents today?" My heart stopped. He just said yes. Now what? I just really hadn't thought it would be a yes. As a result, I hadn't thought about what I should say next. My silence stretched uncomfortably. So then I brilliantly said, "Oh, what documents?" I heard a soft chuckle. "Next time, before you talk to someone like me, you should go to YCombinator.com and download the SafeNote agreement. And also go to the Founder Institute website and find their standard advisory agreement." I laughed, to match his laugh, no pun intended, though I was also kicking myself, and thanked him in advance for his support and collaboration. He said he would get me on a call with his investment partners shortly as a formality. I shuffled out of my bedroom, still a bit stunned, where my parents and brother were watching TV, something I had not been able to do for months. "He said yes," I said with a huge smile. My family cheered, so happy and proud. They enveloped me in a hug. All the sacrifice, all the late nights had led to this moment. The next week, I got on the phone with the partners of Will's fund to discuss the details of the company, and they finalized their investment then and there. I had my first investor and advisor, and it was the co-founder of Match.com. That never would have happened without Alex, who appreciated me helping him with his company, and now vice versa. When you support others in their endeavors, and when you treat everyone with kindness, generosity, and respect, it will always come back to you, oftentimes when you least expect it. Avoid these mistakes when pitching. Throughout your career, there may be times when you need to pitch an idea or sell a new initiative internally, even if you are not an entrepreneur. The company for which you work may have asked you to develop a new product and pitch it internally to receive buy-in and funding from senior management, for example. As a result, I wanted to share with you some of the mistakes I've made in presenting, so you can be sure to avoid the same ones. Though I nowadays generally pitch over tea and conversation without the use of a pitch deck, in the early days of Mogul, I always used a pitch deck in order to visually convince someone to come on board, sharing slide by slide our mission and metrics. When I pitched Will, I didn't know that I made some pretty major mistakes. Number one, the background was black, which looks great on a screen, but if the person you are sending your presentation to prints it out, it is hard to read, plus you owe them $25 for new toner for their printer. Most likely, they won't even want to print it out. So don't make your presentation on black, no matter how powerful that may look on a screen. Number two, because I was so data-focused from my HBS background, I put all the most impressive data on one slide, resulting in a very crowded and hard-to-read slide, instead of spreading it out and giving each data point space on its own. What I know now is that each slide should be making a point, hitting a home run on its own. Otherwise, it's not needed. In other words, if this slide was the only slide that someone saw, it alone should make him or her believe in what you are pitching. Not because it is filled with data, but because it packs a serious punch and makes a point all on its own. Number three, the logos I used were too small to really see. If you have a logo slide of partners or other investors or backers or clients, further establishing your validity, blow up those logos. In the end, every small yes you get will help you land a bigger yes. Therefore, collect and display those small yeses proudly. Use them to create more momentum. Luckily, I didn't know how bad my deck was when I went into my call with Will. Ignorance is bliss, right? But I quickly made sure to fix it before going to my next investor meeting. Fostering FOMO, fear of missing out. Getting that first yes was a huge accomplishment, not just for my confidence, but because I truly believe that one yes will lead to the next yes, which can lead to a snowball of yeses that eventually grows into an avalanche of yeses. Though I'm not sure I would ever advise someone to have their very first